The 6982nd meeting of the Security Council is resumed. Under Rule 37 of the Council's Provisional Rules of Procedure, I invite the representatives of Chile, Ecuador, Eritrea, Papua New Guinea, and Bolivarian Republic, Venezuela, to participate in this meeting. It is so decided. I wish to remind all speakers to limit their statements to no more than 4 minutes in order to enable the Council to carry out its work expeditiously. Delegations with lengthy statements are kindly requested to circulate the texts in writing and to deliver a condensed version when speaking in the Chamber. I now give the floor to the representative of New Zealand.
Thank you, Mr. President. New Zealand joins those who have expressed outrage and sorrow at this morning's attack on the UN compound in Mogadishu and expresses its condolences to all who have been affected. It seems yet again, Mr. President, that we are faced with a situation where in determining its targets or their targets, Al-Qaeda and Al-Shabaab have no scruples and they recognize no boundaries. Mr. President, in its April presidential statement under the Rwandan presidency, this council identified the risk of natural resources becoming a root cause of conflict in Africa. New Zealand, in fact, considers this to be a global issue. Even in our own Pacific region, competition for resources has been a driver of conflict. So we believe the council must consider this issue in a wider context, and we welcome the UK's initiative in calling this meeting and regret that it wasn't possible for this council to make a formal statement on the issue. Extractive industries are often the last to cease operations during hostilities and among the first to return. And they're particularly tempting targets for non-state actors. Natural resources can incentivize peace spoilers. The natural resource dimension is a major challenge for international policymakers, but also presents opportunities for this council to develop better tools for conflict prevention and to improve its mandates to assist states emerging from conflict. We agree with others who've stressed that this council should not assume exclusive competence to deal with these issues. In our view, the combined effort of the whole UN system is required. So it's especially important that this council adapt its methods to enable engagement with other appropriate organs. Similarly, interaction between this council and relevant regional and sub-regional organisations must be improved to ensure better management of resource-driven conflicts. Supply chains and intra-regional trade are often a key element of resource-fueled conflicts, which makes meaningful interaction with the relevant regional and sub-regional organisations of crucial importance. But the fact remains, Mr. President, that only this Security Council has the competence and the essential and effective tools to deal with the resource dimensions of conflict, specifically targeted sanctions and peacekeeping missions. Well-targeted sanctions are very effective instruments for restricting the exploitation of natural resources, which are often used to fund armed conflict, and can be a useful tool to restrict funding for resource-related conflicts. Asset freezes and travel bans can deter spoilers. Sanctions can also support efforts to seek the post-conflict recovery of funds from illegal asset utilisation. And we support the call to improve information sharing between sanctions panels and groups of experts, which, whenever applicable, should include cooperation with relevant peacekeeping missions. And so peacekeeping missions and special political missions in conflict situations with a resource dimension should be specifically mandated to assist national efforts and boost institutions that can reduce the risk of future resource-driven conflict, which means particular attention should be paid to resource regulation and the rule of law. Mr. President, New Zealand also draws attention to the potential for civil society and resource firms to play a positive role. In recent times, civil society has successfully highlighted the link between resource exploitation and conflict. and we are encouraged by voluntary industry efforts to require to self-regulate through the through mechanisms such as the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative. We also believe that this council must pay more attention to the need for national ownership, the work of panels of experts and other UN activities in affected states, and that work must support and enhance national capacities. In short, Mr. President, New Zealand supports effective action by this council in partnership with others and the use of its undoubted powers to address this important issue.
Of New Zealand for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Canada.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur le Président. Mr. President, let me start by adding Canada's voice in deploring the events today in Somalia. Terrorism has once again struck, seeking to deny Somalis the right to move forward in their future and making the United Nations a target for the work that it undertakes on behalf of this organization and of all Somalis. Mr. President, I'd like to commend you for refocusing the Security Council's attention on conflict prevention and natural resources by organizing this debate. Canada welcomes a fulsome discussion of the role of effective natural resources management in conflict prevention. Without sound management, extractive sector development can lead to increased corruption, poor development outcomes, illicit trafficking, and, in certain circumstances, the fueling of armed conflict and human rights violations. There is an increased international acknowledgement that economic growth is fundamental to long-term stability in fragile and conflict-affected states. Benefits from the extractive sector's activities have the potential to transform economies and can be important drivers of sustainable economic growth and job creations. Monsieur le Président, le gouvernement du Canada juge prioritaire l'appui au mécanisme permettant de veiller l'exploitation responsable des ressources. Nous sommes conscients des avantages qui présentent le secteur des ressources naturelles pour un pays. L'un des importants éléments de l'exploitation responsable des ressources, mis en valeur par le Royaume-Uni à l'occasion du sommet du G8 cette année à Lockern, est la transparence et la responsabilisation dans le secteur extractif. Étant donné l'importance qu'il revêt cet enjeu, le Premier ministre du Canada a annoncé le 12 juin de cette année que le Canada mettrait en place des nouvelles normes obligatoires en matière d'établissement des rapports à l'intention des sociétés extractives canadiennes. Le nouveau régime de rapport permettra de renforcer la transparence, de veiller à ce que le Canada respecte les normes internationales déjà en place et de garantir des règles de jeu équitables pour les entreprises, de renforcer les garanties en matière d'investissement et de contribuer à un renforcement de l'intégrité des sociétés extractives. Mr. President, while we recognize the need for transparency initiatives, we also want to ensure that the debate today and discussions that follow also identify other tools available to strengthen the links between natural resource development and conflict prevention. As an example, by encouraging the conflict-sensitive business practices in fragile and conflict-affected situations, donor governments can sensitize their extractive companies to local conflict dynamics and help them find ways to structure their operations to contribute to positive peace-building and development outcomes. To advance such tools, it is essential that all the right actors are at the table, including communities, civil society, and the private sector. It is also important to address core sources for instability, such as by providing employment opportunities for youth and bolstering government finances for basic service provision. Our commitment as Canada to promoting responsible natural resource governance features prominently in our efforts abroad. To cite several examples, we are continuing to implement Canada's corporate social responsibility strategy and support many international initiatives such as the EITI, the Kimberley Process Certification Scheme, the OECD's Multilateral Stakeholder Forum on Due Diligence, and others. The recent establishment of the new Canadian International Institute for Extractive Industries and Development will encourage policy innovation on how governments, companies, and others can contribute to improved development outcomes in the future. Monsieur le Président, il est clair que les pratiques de gouvernance responsable permettent d'assurer que les ressources naturelles aient une incidence positive et durable sur la croissance économique et la réduction de la pauvreté. Ainsi, le Canada est en faveur de l'inclusion de ces enjeux dans les mandats de mission concernés. Les missions des Nations Unies peuvent jouer un rôle important en aidant à créer des institutions nationales, à gérer les risques de conflits connexes et à garantir une participation inclusive. For that reason, Mr. President, we are very pleased that the United Nations Security Council is renewing its consideration of this very timely subject, and we are committed to working with the international community and all partners to encourage responsible natural resource development. I thank you, Mr. President. Merci beaucoup, Monsieur le Président.
I thank the representative of Canada for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Turkey.
Thank you. I would like to also begin my words by strongly condemning the heinous and cowardly terrorist attack on the UN compound in Mogadishu. We extend our heartfelt condolences to the families of the victims and wish a speedy recovery to the wounded. I would also like to express our appreciation to the United Kingdom for carrying this important issue to the Security Council's agenda 6 years after it was last discussed. I would also like to thank the Deputy Secretary General, Mr. Eliasson, and the Africa Progress Panel Chair, Mr. Annan, as well as the World Bank and UNDP representatives for their briefings and the important information they have provided us with. The blessing and curse dichotomy of natural resources is evident. Some countries are among the richest in the world due to their natural resources, while many others that are rich in such resources are the poorest in the world. In fact, 4 of the 5 countries that are considered to be the poorest in the world possess a wealth of natural resources, including oil, gas, gold, uranium, titanium, diamonds, copper, silver, and coltan. There is an undeniable link between natural resources and conflicts. In some conflicts, parties fight to gain control over such resources. In others, they use the profits gained from these resources to continue fighting. There is even a correlation between illegal extraction of natural resources and incidences of sexual violence, which are very concerning. Turkey also strongly condemns the recruitment of children in the exploitation and extraction of natural resources in armed conflict. In order to combat this scourge, all measures should be taken to prevent the illicit trade and illegal exploitation of these resources. Their effective and transparent management would contribute to this end. Therefore, all initiatives that promote transparency and encourage stability play an important role. Additionally, effective cooperation between source, transit, and destination countries is needed to combat illicit trade. However, the transparent and effective management of these resources is not enough on its own. Good governance, development, and stability are equally important, and all these elements are mutually reinforcing. The private sector can also make important contribution to our work by helping to develop the extractive industries and generate the resources needed for these countries' development. But in this process, they must act with corporate and social responsibility. National governments should also hold their private sector firms accountable for their practices and role in the stability in the host country. Commercial interests should never supersede the interest of host countries and especially of their people. Civil society also has an important role to play, which can range from collecting data to assisting countries with their expertise to monitoring practices of domestic and foreign actors. Mr. President, a key actor in post-conflict settings, the UN also has an important role to play in the matters taken up today's open debate. It can assist post-conflict countries in need in building their capacities in the management of natural resources. This assistance can take different forms, including helping them to design and or strengthen their regulatory structures and relevant national legislation. However, the institutional capacity of the UN also needs to be further developed in this area. Furthermore, the UN's entities and their efforts must be well coordinated and take an integrated and multidimensional approach. In this context, the Peacebuilding Commission is well placed not only to coordinate efforts, but also to provide the necessary guidance and resources at its disposal. We believe that during the Council's future deliberations on conflict and post-conflict situations, the natural resource dimension should also be taken into account where necessary. Mr. President, we should never lose sight of the fact that the resources below the ground belong to those who live on that ground. No party should attempt to unjustly exploit or illegally seize the resources of another. Additionally, as it is often stated, natural resources alone are not the source for conflict. In this regard, confronting the root causes of conflicts, addressing the other factors that fuel them, and preventing and peacefully resolving them with instruments such as mediation is of paramount importance. I thank you, Mr. President.
I now give the floor to the representative of Ethiopia.
Thank you for this opportunity. I want to congratulate you once again for organizing this open debate on another very important matter. Naturally, we express indignation at what happened in Mogadishu today. Mr. President, the concept paper on the theme of the debate is, in general, both comprehensive and very helpful. Of course, we approach the theme from an African perspective, among other things, because it is mostly Africa that has been at the receiving end of the consequences of the so much greed and shenanigans, often but not always associated with the exploitation of natural resources, most particularly evident in extractive industries. The British government should be commended for its extractive industries transparency initiative. Mr. President, the concept paper rightly indicates that extractive resources are never the sole source of conflict. In fact, one can go further and argue that extractive resources are not or may not be the major source of conflict. The concept paper makes two very correct assumptions. One relates to the many examples of countries that have enjoyed security and stability, and, as the concept paper says, impressive economic growth through the effective management of their extractive industries. The second suggestion is that countries dependent on extractive industries are vulnerable and susceptible to conflict when they have weak governance and state institutions. Mr. President, it may not be fair for Africa to always blame others for problems that are sometimes of its own making. But on the other hand, no region of the world has been as much the subject of so much abuse and all sorts of destabilization activities because of greed focusing on the continent's natural resources. Is there a better illustration of this than what befell the DRC since the time of Patrice Lumumba? I am proposing, Mr. President, that while all the suggestions made in the concept paper to ensure transparency and accountability in this domain are valid and very helpful, what at the end of the day is going to be even more effective is what is done at the country level. As the concept paper has indicated, by strengthening state institutions and democratic governance. It's only by so doing that ownership by the concerned people could be realized, without which no amount of work by the outside world would be fully effective in making sure that extractive industries would not be a cause for conflict. Even then, given the fact that natural resources generate rents, the possibility of corruption and the temptation to underhanded attempt to gain undeserved advantages by officials and their foreign partners may not be entirely avoided. But there is perhaps no other better solution for this than the proper internal democratic mechanism for ensuring vigilance and monitoring. In other words, what's critical is what is done at the country level in connection with good and democratic governance, which allows space for grassroots participation and control. In fact, too much intrusive initiatives from outside may be seen to be aimed at depriving ownership through resort to a variety of methods. Mr. President, before I conclude, I should mention the fact that the debate, in our view, would have been far more useful if the theme had been broadened more and not limited to the extractive sector, because lack of careful, balanced, fair, and just use of natural resources has also implications for peace and stability, not only within countries, but also in interstate relations. This is perhaps a theme which would have to be tackled in the not-so-distant future. I thank you.
I thank the representative of Ethiopia for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Botswana.
Thank you, Mr. President, for giving me the floor. Mr. President, my delegation joins in extending our heartfelt condolences to the government and people of Somalia and to the bereaved families following the terrorist attack on the UN compound in Mogadishu this morning. My delegation sincerely commends the UK presidency for convening this open debate, which provides us with a unique opportunity to continue to exchange views on this very important agenda item. Mr. President, we particularly welcome your concept paper, which clearly outlines the correlation between conflict and natural resources. We also thank the UN Deputy Secretary General, Mr. Jan Eliasson, the Chair of Africa Progress, Mr. Kofi Annan, the World Bank Managing Director, Ms. Carolyn Anstey, and the UNDP representative, Ms. Greenspan, for their very insightful contributions. Mr. President, I wish to begin by reaffirming the importance that Botswana attaches to the principles of the UN Charter. And in this regard, we fully support the primary responsibility of the Security Council, which is to maintain international peace and security. The issue under discussion, Mr. President, in this Council today is not new to the Council. We all know why natural resources always often cause conflicts. Whilst there are various forms of natural resource conflicts, there are a few underlying common causes. Greed and corruption driven by self-interest of governing elites are in most cases the primary motivation. There is ample evidence to demonstrate that predatory governance leads to chronic mismanagement of natural resources. This is often accompanied by disproportionate investment in military expenditure to suppress the population. Mismanagement of natural resources goes hand in hand with low societal welfare. Every society that feels neglected by governing elites, Mr. President, is susceptible to violent conflict. This is because poor economic performance is breeding ground for rebellion. There are also instances where spoilers promote illegal exploitation of natural resources despite the best intentions of legitimate governments to provide economic resources equitably. Some go so far as promoting secession in order to maintain control over natural resource endowed areas of the countries. Mr. President, my delegation is of the view that the Security Council is uniquely placed to play a leading role in the prevention of conflict. Just as we support the concept of doing more with less in the United Nations system, we are also in favor of a paradigm shift in the business of the Security Council. Rather than being crisis-driven, this body should invest in prevention of conflict by aggressively pursuing early warning systems. Any horizon scan that picks up factors which provide an environment conducive to conflict should be met with unwavering resolve to deploy tools of prevention, such as fact-finding missions. existing regional structures can also come handy in this regard, Mr. President. When there is evidence of a smoldering situation, a panel of high-level mediators should be deployed to arrest the situation before it develops into conflict. My delegation is of the view that prevention is more cost-effective than peacekeeping. The cost of human suffering at the hands of natural resource conflicts cannot be ignored, let alone resource requirements for peacekeeping operations. Mr. President, Botswana has scorned the so-called resource curse due to prudent and visionary leadership of the country. We are thus in a position to offer valuable lessons on sound management of natural resources, and we are very humbled, Mr. President, by the frequent mention of our country by a number of delegations that took the floor before me. Mr. President, Botswana graduated from being a least developed country at independence to middle income status mainly because of investment in revenue from natural resources into the various sectors of the economy and areas such as education, health, infrastructure development, to mention but a few. This is because mineral rights in Botswana have been vested in the state, which arrangement guarantees stability, openness, and transparency, and also promotes a responsible policy regime for management of natural resources, free of corruption and political interference. This arrangement ensures that there is equitable distribution of proceeds from the exploitation of the country's natural resource base. To this end, Mr. Chairman, we remain firmly committed to the Kimberley process and the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative. In conclusion, Mr. President, we call on the international community to scale up its cooperation assistance to strengthen institutions which promote good governance and the rule of law. We believe this can go a long way in preventing a breeding ground for conflict. Lastly, there should be periodic review of existing multilateral mechanisms which facilitate prevention of natural resource conflict. This is necessary to provide the required flexibility to adapt to evolving challenges. I thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, for your attention. Thank you very much indeed.
I thank the representative of Botswana for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Bolivia.
Muchas gracias, señor presidente. En primer lugar, Bolivia desea sumarse al dolor de las familias de las víctimas de lo sucedido hoy en Mogadiscio y lamentar que hasta ahora la comunidad internacional no haya podido detener la dolorosa espiral de violencia que se vive en distintos puntos del planeta. Señor presidente, mientras me dirigí a la sede de Naciones Unidas para atender el debate convocado por la presidencia del Consejo de Seguridad, conversaba con un colega latinoamericano sobre la guerra del Chaco, conflicto armado que se desarrolló durante el siglo pasado entre dos de los países más pobres de Sudamérica. Esta guerra fue promovida por dos empresas petroleras, por dos multinacionales petroleras, que peleaban por los recursos naturales de esa parte del mundo. Ese ejemplo tan doloroso para mi región es uno claro que desnuda lo que en este debate debe decirse también con claridad. Que la historia de la mayoría de los conflictos armados es la historia de las invasiones, es la historia de la apropiación de los recursos naturales. El enfoque que hemos escuchado y hemos leído en el concept note que se nos ha hecho llegar no puede ser desde nuestra perspectiva más que caracterizado como intervencionista y de intromisión y violación de las soberanías de los estados. Los temas de control, regulación, acceso y aprovechamiento de los recursos naturales, renovables y no renovables, son de competencia exclusiva de los estados. Además, en todo caso, los asuntos vinculados al desarrollo sostenible, a la transparencia, a la lucha contra la corrupción, corresponden a la Asamblea General, al Consejo Económico y Social y a otras agencias y reparticiones de las Naciones Unidas. Nos preocupa lo que se esconde detrás de algunas palabras. Alrededor de este tema se dicen frases como buen gobierno, como transparencia, prevención de conflictos, gestión efectiva de recursos naturales o la buena regulación de los sectores extractivos. Nos preocupa porque justamente muchas de las intervenciones bélicas promovidas por algunos miembros permanentes de este Consejo se han hecho utilizando palabras encomiables para la comunidad internacional. Con el tiempo nos dimos cuenta que en las guerras orquestadas, cuando se dice libertad, se debe entender materias primas. Cuando se dice democracia, se debe entender petróleo. Cuando se dice derechos humanos, se debe entender mercado de consumo y mano de obra barata. Si existe alguna duda, preguntémonos qué pasó, cuáles fueron las razones, cuáles fueron las excusas de las guerras en Irak y más recientemente en Libia. Estamos ante un proceso de refinamiento de las estructuras argumentativas y de los mecanismos de intervención. Proceso en el que los generadores de la demanda, por supuesto, quieren controlar la oferta. ¿Qué otra explicación podemos tener ante las pretensiones de medir el grado de, abro comillas, susceptibilidad ante el conflicto, cierro comillas, de los países con, abro comillas, dependencia de industrias extractivas, cierro comillas? El propósito es que, en base a esa denominada susceptibilidad, se busque intervenir en el diseño y rediseño de nuestra institucionalidad y legalidad, con el pretexto de la prevención de conflictos e incluso pretendiendo establecer sanciones a través de comités o paneles de expertos. En realidad, es una forma inadmisible de intervencionismo y una forma más refinada de colonialismo, que vulnera, como decíamos, la soberanía de los estados, distorsiona el concepto de cooperación internacional y amenaza la preservación de la paz. Nos preguntamos, ¿seremos susceptibles ante el conflicto quienes soberanamente recuperamos los recursos estratégicos que estaban en manos de transnacionales? ¿Seremos susceptibles ante el conflicto quienes nacionalizamos nuestros recursos estratégicos? Si de prevención de conflicto se trata, espero que el Consejo pueda alguna vez analizar el rol de las transnacionales en los conflictos armados. La necesaria, imprescindible e impostergable, lo digo nuevamente en este lugar, refundación de la propia estructura de este Consejo de Seguridad. La refundación de la Organización de Naciones Unidas, cuya estructura, como ya lo hemos dicho mil veces, lamentablemente no responde a las necesidades del mundo actual y que sigue en manos de unos pocos, violando los principios de democracia y de igualdad entre los estados. En términos más globales, como lo apuntó mi colega argentina, lo que hace falta es un nuevo orden mundial, unas nuevas Naciones Unidas, un nuevo orden económico-financiero, cambiando los patrones de producción y cambiando los paradigmas de consumo que actualmente son insostenibles. Luchar genuinamente contra la pobreza, contra la desnutrición y el hambre. Transparentar y acabar con los paraísos fiscales. Otro tema que probablemente podría ser profundamente analizado. La concentración de la riqueza en tan pocas manos. La concentración del conocimiento. La ausencia de transferencia de tecnología, que son también fuentes de la pobreza y, por supuesto, de la exclusión. Muchas gracias.
I thank the representative of Bolivia for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of the Netherlands.
Thank you, Mr. President. And let me begin by expressing my condolences to both the government and the people of Somalia and to the families of the victims of this morning's terrible terrorist attack.
I also would like to align myself with the statement made by the representative of the European Union. Mr. President, in 2025, two-thirds of the world population will be faced with scarcity of water, and 2.4 billion people will face absolute water scarcity to the extent that it threatens to impede and even reverse economic and social progress. There are numerous examples where transboundary waters have proven to be a source of cooperation rather than conflict. And for instance, in my own country, this is the case. However, increased scarcity in the future due to economic and population growth, combined with cross-border pollution and climate change, may well change this dynamic. The increasing scarcity of water is just one aspect of the relationship between conflict prevention and natural resources. I would therefore like to thank the United Kingdom for putting the relationship between conflict prevention and natural resources on today's agenda. Let me start by briefly reviewing three events of last week, which I believe are all three relevant for our debate today. Last Monday, the International Energy Agency presented its latest publication, Redrawing the Energy Climate Map. This report shows that the path we are currently on is likely to result in a temperature increase of between 3.6 degrees Celsius and 5.3 degrees Celsius, which of course is far above the maximum we agreed to of 2.2 degrees Celsius. The second relevant event was last Wednesday. The European Parliament approved the new EU Accounting and Transparency Obligations Directives, which include financial transparency requirements for the extractive and forestry sector. And thirdly, last Friday, the UN report World Population Prospects, the 2012 revision, was published. This report projects that the current world population of 72 billion will reach 9.6 billion by 2050. The resulting increase in consumption will put even greater pressure on natural resources. Last October, the World Resources Forum organized a conference in Beijing that focused on the need for better international resource governance, because this leads to more stability and lower prices. The Netherlands was among those countries that proposed to consider establishing a neutral international forum on resources, in particular metals and minerals, comparable to the existing International Energy Forum. Such a forum should involve resource producing, trading and consuming countries. In March of this year, the Netherlands hosted the yearly meeting of the participants in the Voluntary Principles Initiative on security and human rights in the extractive industries. With this multi-stakeholder initiative, we engaged in a dialogue on security and human rights. We have developed together a set of voluntary principles to guide companies in maintaining safety and security of their operations, within an operating framework that ensures respect for human rights and fundamental freedoms. As stated by the UK in its concept note for this debate, the RUGI principles on business and human rights provide a common framework since their adoption in 2011, and the Netherlands is fully committed to their integral implementation. Mr. President, let me end by giving you a practical example of a contribution of the Netherlands to prevent conflicts related to natural resources. The armed conflicts in the mineral-rich eastern provinces of the Democratic Republic of the Congo have often been described in their relation to the income from the illicit trade in minerals. To contribute to the common objective to regulate the flow of conflict minerals, while aiming to prevent further armed conflict, the Netherlands has created a conflict-free tin supply chain. This pilot initiative was launched last October and has already resulted in the first exports of conflict-free tin. The Netherlands Development Corporation financed a local NGO called PACT that tags and traces the tin ore. Dutch diplomats served as neutral brokers, bringing the whole international supply chain together, from mining cooperatives in a validated conflict-free mine in eastern DRC to exporters, a Malaysian smelter, because there are no tin smelters in Africa, and to companies such as Philips, Tata Steel, Motorola Solutions, Nokia, and Fairphone. And these exports led to the first certified conflict-free earnings in the DRC from tin exports. This initiative builds on the expertise and skills of many organizations. It is a multi-stakeholder approach in which the DRC government, NGOs, the Tin Research Institute in London, the German Geological Service, and USAID were also involved. It is just one example of what is possible, and more is needed. The debate here today contributes to build on these kind of initiatives. It should promote further cooperation, resulting in an all-inclusive process in all stages of the value chain of natural resources, thereby contributing to the prevention of conflicts and improvement of livelihoods in resource-rich countries. Thank you.
I thank the representative of the Netherlands for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Nigeria.
Mr. President, we condemn unequivocally the attack on the United Nations compound in Mogadishu this morning and offer our condolences to the families of the victims. We appreciate your initiative in organizing this seminal debate designed to establish the linkage between the transparent and effective management of extractive industries and conflict prevention. I thank you very much for the concept note which has provided a compass for our discussion today. I want to express my appreciation to the Deputy Secretary General, Jan Eliasson, the World Bank Managing Director, Caroline Nancy, Ms. Rebecca Greenspan, the USG, and the Chair of the Africa Progress Panel, Mr. Kofi Annan, for their informative briefings. Mr. President, there is no doubt that natural resources and their exploitation has been a contributing factor to tensions and conflicts both within and between states. In recent years, while interstate conflict over natural resources has been managed relatively well through appropriate mediation and adjudication, the struggle over domestic natural resources has been the source of brutal conflicts and civil wars in some parts of the world. In the discharge of his remit of maintaining international peace and security, it is only appropriate that the Security Council should focus on the exploitation of natural resources as one of the root causes of conflict. While natural resources present an opportunity for enhanced economic growth and sustainable development, in many cases, these resources have instead provided the fuel for conflict. It is imperative that natural resources are managed responsibly for the benefit of the population in order to prevent conflict. This good governance approach should be aimed at promoting human security and economic development. It should also establish the nexus between human security and development. It is the inherent responsibility of government to ensure the protection and survival of the constitutional order by creating the conditions necessary for human security. This implies that the equitable distribution of the returns from natural resources would provide health care, education, poverty alleviation, and indeed reinforce efforts towards development, as well as eliminate the sources of tension and disaffection from society. Mr. President, we believe that states facing difficulty in the management of their natural resources should invest more effort in strengthening the rule of law, especially in its enforcement to contain illicit exploitation of the natural resources. In Nigeria, the tensions in the oil-rich Niger Delta were exacerbated by the illicit foreign-driven exploitation of the region's national resources. Oil theft, illegal bunkers, illegal fishing, and the attendant degradation of the environment. This anomalous situation could have plunged the region into crisis if the federal government had not taken strident steps to ameliorate the problem. Though the government has taken steps to ease the tension, the situation has been heightened by illicit domestic and external activities, leading to the loss of about 150,000 barrels of crude oil per day. Mr. President, A more significant and no less devastating aspect of the illegal exploitation of natural resources in conflict situations is its impact on the environment and its distortion of the livelihood of the people in the affected communities. Good governance must establish the linkages between natural resource exploitation, environmental degradation and poverty, and in so doing, take necessary steps to ensure compliance with international safety and environmental standards. Today, we are not unmindful of the multifaceted nature of conflicts. The natural resource dimension which we address at this forum appears to be the touchstone. I believe we must take a long-term strategic view of this dimension of conflict in order to secure a more peaceful future. Thank you.
I thank the representative of Nigeria for her statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Ghana.
Shukran, Sayyid al-Rais. Sayyid al-Rais, أود أن أهنئكم على ترأس مجلس الأمن في هذا الشهر الحافل بالأعمال وأننا على ثقة من أنكم على قدر هذه المهمة وستقودون أعمال المجلس إلى نتائج مفيدة. واسمحوا لي بداية أن أتقدم باسم حكومة دولة قطر بالتعازي لضحايا الهجوم الذي وقع على مجمع الأمم المتحدة في مقديشو اليوم، معبرين عن تضامن حكومة دولة قطر مع الحكومة الاتحادية الصومالية ومؤكدين على أهمية ضمان سلامة موظفي الأمم المتحدة وبعثاتها. السيد الرئيس، عندما عقد مجلسكم الموقر الاجتماع السابق حول مسألة الموارد الطبيعية والنزاعات في عام 2007، انضمت دولة قطر التي كانت آنذاك عضوا في المجلس إلى توافق الآراء حول عقد جلسة مناقشة مفتوحة بشأن هذا الموضوع وحول البيان الرئاسي الصادر عنها، إلا أننا أكدنا في تلك الجلسة ونود أن نعيد التأكيد في هذه أيضا على عدة مبادئ. إن المواثيق الدولية تؤكد على حق الدول الدائم بالسيادة على مواردها الطبيعية واستغلالها، وأن من دعائم الاستقلال السياسي والاقتصادي لأي دولة تمتعها بحقها الكامل في ممارسة السيادة التامة على ثرواتها ومواردها الطبيعية والتصرف بها وفقا لمصالحها الوطنية، وهذا ما يتفق مع ميثاق الأمم المتحدة ونص عليه العهد الدولي للحقوق الاقتصادية والاجتماعية والثقافية لعام 1966، والعهد الدولي للحقوق المدنية والسياسية لعام 1966، وفي قرارات الجمعية العامة بما فيها القرار 1803-17 المؤرخ 14/12/1962 والمعنون السيادة الدائمة على الموارد الطبيعية، وفي ميثاق حقوق الدول وواجباتها الاقتصادية المرفق بقرار الجمعية العامة 3281-29 المؤرخ 12/12/1974. وكذلك نشير إلى أن القانون الدولي يلزم دول الاحتلال بعدم استغلال الموارد الطبيعية في الأراضي المحتلة وعدم إلحاق الضرر بها. سيدي الرئيس، يجب إزالة اللبس عن الصلة بين الموارد الطبيعية والنزاعات، فليس وجود الموارد الطبيعية كالمواد الاستخراجية بحد ذاته مصدراً أو سبباً أو بيئة مواتية لنشوب النزاعات أو لتهديد السلم والأمن الدوليين أو لتفشي الفساد وانتهاكات حقوق الإنسان. صحيح أن الدراسات والتقارير المختلفة عن أسباب النزاع في أفريقيا وغيرها توضح طائفة عريضة من أسباب النزاع، وأنه كثيراً ما يرد فيها ذكر الموارد الطبيعية، ولكن هذا لا يعني أن الموارد الطبيعية هي السبب، بل إن الفساد والنزاعات التي تتغذى على الموارد الطبيعية تعود لأسباب مختلفة من أشكال الظلم الاجتماعي والسياسي وإلى النواتج المتراكمة للحقبة الاستعمارية إلى الاستغلال غير المشروع للموارد الطبيعية للدول الواقعة تحت الاحتلال والأطماع الخارجية والمتغيرات الإقليمية، إلى إساءة تسخير الموارد الطبيعية لصالح التنمية، وغير ذلك من العوامل التي يجب إدراكها والتصدي لها. إننا نتفق مع أهمية التصدي لهذه الأسباب الجذرية للنزاعات ومع أهمية الإدارة الجيدة للموارد الطبيعية. من واقع تجربتنا يمكن أن تكون الموارد الطبيعية نعمة على الدول التي تتمتع بها إن تم تسخيرها بالأسلوب الصحيح نحو دفع عجلة النمو الاقتصادي والتقدم والتطور وخلق فرص عمل وتطوير مؤشرات التنمية الاجتماعية والثقافية والإنسانية وحقوق الإنسان ودعم الحكم الرشيد وتعزيز سيادة القانون ومكافحة الفساد وتقوية الاستقرار السياسي والاقتصادي وتحسين حياة ورفاه المواطنين. ولأهمية مسألة الموارد الطبيعية غير المتجددة نرى أن مناقشتها يجب أن تتم في المحافل الدولية المناسبة كالجمعية العامة والمجلس الاقتصادي والاجتماعي ولجنة بناء السلام، وأن تكون ضمن الأجندة التنموية وأجندة بناء السلام للأمم المتحدة بهدف مساعدة الدول لا سيما المتضررة من النزاع على إقامة مؤسسات فعالة وشفافة والإدارة المثلى لمواردها الطبيعية بما يعود بالنفع عليها. وهنا نذكر بأن أي مساعدة تقدم بهذا الخصوص يجب أن تكون بطلب من الحكومة الشرعية المعنية. السيد الرئيس، ومن وجهة نظرنا فإن تناول مجلس الأمن لهذه المسألة يجب أن يكون بطبيعة الحال وفقاً لولايته واختصاصاته، أي في إطار عمله المخصص لكل بلد، وعلى أساس كل حالة على حدة، وذلك في البلدان التي تعاني من الصراع المسلح وحالات ما بعد الصراع التي تشكل تهديداً للسلم والأمن الدوليين. ولا شك أن مجلس الأمن يتخذ إجراءات هامة لمنع تفاقم الصراعات التي لها صلة بالموارد الطبيعية مثل الحظر الذي فرضه في عدة حالات على الاستغلال غير المشروع لبعض هذه الموارد لتمويل الصراعات، ويجب أن تتواصل دراسة هذه الإجراءات لرفع فعاليتها وتأثيرها وتلافي الثغرات فيها. وشكرا لكم.
I thank the representative of Qatar for his statement, and I now give the floor to the representative of Armenia.
Mr. President, we would like to join previous speakers in offering our condolences on tragedy happened in Somalia today. Armenia condemns massive attack on a United Nations compound in Mogadishu, which resulted in dozens of casualties among UNSOM staff and security. Our prayers go to the families of victims, United Nations, and the government of Somalia. I express my appreciation to you, Mr. President, for organizing this open debate, and thank the Deputy Secretary General, as well as World Bank Managing Director and Chair of African Progress Panel for their contributions. United Nations bodies and the Security Council in particular are uniquely placed to promote global policy development to address dimensions of the linkages between natural resources and conflict. Along with other development partners, including the Bretton Woods institutions, the Council can effectively contribute to the post-conflict peace-building efforts to integrate the peace and development agenda in the context of governance and management of natural resources. Mr. President, the role of natural resources in fueling conflicts and prolonging their political resolutions is being increasingly recognized in strategies for conflict prevention and peace building. The international experience shows that multidimensional approach is required to reduce the linkages between instability and conflict in mineral-rich countries and regions through the deployment of a wide range of security and development initiatives. In the volatile region of the Sub-Caucasus, we have yet to fully employ an essential resource that could bring us closer to peace, sustainable economic development, creation of regional opportunities for trade, investment, and jobs that could lead to the engagement and solutions on a political front. A good starting point is to look at current policy tools and analyze how the countries in our region address natural resources. A coordinated effort to mainstream transparent, efficient, and equitable governance and management of natural resources to develop policies and conflict prevention strategies is rather essential. The mechanisms through which natural resources induce or prolong conflicts are often deeply rooted in economic and social structures and call for integrated approaches in addressing peace and development. Good governance and management of natural resources are the core tools for conflict prevention. Mr. President, the high dependence of natural resources without proper and fair management and appropriate policies is creating social tensions, weakening government institutions, prolonging conflict resolutions, and thus increasing the risk of conflict resumption. Corruption, state weakness, and reduced accountability tend to be associated with large revenues from natural resources. It is a well-known fact that the corruption appears to be a problem due to the sheer volume of the revenues from natural resources. Mr. President, it is also true that the rich natural resources base does not necessarily lead to the poor economic performance. There are several examples of stable democracies where natural resources have contributed to long-term economic growth and equitable income distribution. Natural resources can significantly contribute to economic development in an appropriate, diversified economic framework. Today, as the member states are focused on implementation of Millennium Development Goals and other internationally agreed development goals, we all have a unique opportunity to develop an inclusive approach to natural resources in development, conflict prevention, and peace building, thus integrating the management of natural resources to national sustainable development policies. The successful implementation of this agenda requires a basic level of political will and determination on the part of all stakeholders as precondition for peace building and peace supporting. With these political conditions in place, the ability of the UN and any other intergovernmental or regional actor will be enhanced and supported. Armenia, therefore, welcomes the UK initiative to hold these thematic discussions. This is an opportunity to recap and reflect on our experiences in dealing with the issue of conflict prevention and natural resources. I thank you, sir.
I thank the representative of Armenia for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Malaysia.
Mr. President, I wish to express my sincere congratulations to the United Kingdom on your assuming the presidency of the Security Council for this month. My delegation is also of the view that this debate is timely and will contribute in the development of better understanding on this important question. At this juncture, Mr. President, Malaysia joins other nations in condemning the outrageous attack on the UN compound in Somalia today. We extend our deepest condolence on the losses suffered by both Somalia and the UN. Mr. President, the correlation between conflicts and natural resources is not a myth. It is a reality. While some countries have progressed tremendously with natural resources, others are cursed with the abundance of strategic commodities. History has proven that wars have emerged where natural resources are at stake. Malaysia has always been critical on the violence and carnage that has been caused by conflict due to natural resources. Our world is rich with resources, from the large plain fields that produce crops and the precious minerals that have helped countries develop. It is us who will determine if these resources are a boon or a bane. My delegation believes that the key to successful mitigation of conflict caused by natural resources is through good governance and responsible management of these resources. Governments are key actors and must be responsible and accountable. In managing resources, governments are the regulators of mining licenses and thus in a position to determine the distribution of wealth from natural resources which generates growth of a country. Malaysia is not oblivious to such challenges. Striking a balance between good governance and maximizing yield, the managing of Malaysia's oil reserves have been of utmost importance to the government of Malaysia. We formed the Petronas in 1974 as our national oil company. Much of its current success can be attributed to the relevant laws and running the entity as a full-fledged commercial organization. As a state-owned entity, Petronas is responsible for the effective management of Malaysia's oil and gas resources and to ensure the orderly and sustainable development of the nation's petroleum industry. governed by its Code of Conduct and Business Ethics, COBE, Petronas has continued to accommodate developments in local and international laws and practices, as well as technological developments and benchmark to international standards. The COBE will not only promote legal and procedural compliance, but also provide a moral compass in guiding its work in the international arena. Mr. President, it is without a doubt that the UN has a role to play in providing a neutral and impartial advice to countries in need. My delegation is of the view that there are many mechanisms already in place to support such an endeavor. The Peace Building Commission is one such instrument. The Commission has been active in supporting countries under its agenda. It has continued to provide the Security Council its advisory role on pertinent developments on Sierra Leone, Liberia, Central African Republic, Guinea, Guinea-Bissau, and Burundi. Through the Commission, member states have been able to interact in the field to support national governments in prioritizing strategies and plans of action, which may include the management of natural resources to prevent relapse to conflict. Malaysia also shares the view that the Commission and the UN country teams have a role to play in developing synergies in conflict prevention. These synergies can be realized in peace-building programs and building of capacity of governments, thus making them important mechanisms in monitoring the adherence to community schemes. This will support efforts in the prevention of conflict in relevant countries. Mr. President, Malaysia also holds the view that the UN can play a critical part to the prevention of conflict. However, my delegation will also stress on the importance of reaffirming the inherent sovereign rights of states in the exploitation of their resources. Such precepts are deeply seated in the principles of international law and the sovereign rights of member states in maintaining its territorial integrity. Mr. President, Malaysia does not dispute the inherent connection of natural resources in filling conflicts. While good governance, responsibility and accountability of governments play the key role in preventing strategic communities from fueling conflicts, we, the international community, must also do our part in supporting these countries with the necessary support to ensure that these member states do not relapse into conflict. I thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of Malaysia for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Timor-Leste.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I would also like to join other delegations in condemning the terrible attack on the UN compound in Mogadishu and to convey our sympathies to the government and the people of Somalia and the families of the victims. Allow me also to thank you for convening this open debate and for the opportunity to share my country's experience. And yes, we agree with you that the effective and transparent management of a country's natural resources can be critical to preventing conflict. Mr. President, Timor-Leste is a very young nation, and we are proud to be at the forefront of the world's best practice in relation to the management of our natural resources. Much effort has gone into the building of institutional and legal capacity to transparently and effectively manage our extractive industries. Last month, we celebrated the 11th anniversary of the restoration of independence. The path towards stability and development has been difficult, especially considering the daunting challenge of building a nation from ashes. Now, with a solid foundation of security and stability, there is a strong sense of hope and confidence in Timor-Leste. Confidence and aspirations that are stipulated in the Strategic Development Plan of 2011 to 2030, which aims to transform the country from a low-income nation to a country with upper-middle income levels by 2030, with a population that is secure, educated, and healthy. An important part of this plan is economic progress and the development of industries which will diversify the economy and drive our prosperity. Our petroleum industry is critical to both economic growth, prosperity, and capacity development. Petroleum revenue belongs to the Timorese people, and the government is determined to ensure that any income generated from those resources benefits all the people, including future generations. This is why the Constitution states that the resources of the soil, the subsoil, the territorial waters in the continental shelf and economic zone, which are essential to the economy, shall be owned by the state and shall be used in a fair and equitable manner in accordance with national interests. And it is why Parliament adopted the Petroleum Fund Law, requiring all petroleum income to be invested in a sovereign wealth fund in accordance with the principle of good governance for the benefit of current and future generations. A small portion of the fund is used for the state budget pursuant to approval by Parliament. This transfer is guided by estimated sustainable income. At this point, it's estimated at 3%, which is the amount that over time can be spent without depleting the petroleum wealth. The governance of the Petroleum Fund is based on a high degree of transparency and disclosure of information to help build public support for the wise management of petroleum revenues and to reduce the risk of misappropriation and corruption. Timor-Leste is very proud to be the first country in Asia and third country in the world to comply with the Extractive Industry Transparency Initiative, meaning that every dollar of the petroleum revenue is publicly disclosed and matched with the records of resource companies. The government has embraced the principles underpinning the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative and has gone on to develop the world's most accessible, comprehensive and transparent online database of publicly available information on budget expenditure, tenders, development partners' contributions and program implementation. Timor-Leste's management of its extractive industries resources has been endorsed by the Revenue Watch Institute. And in 2013, we have been ranked 13 out of 58 countries surveyed and ranked above some of our development partners for safeguards and quality controls. We are mindful of the resource curse and the need to diversify our economy, and we are aware of the potential for conflict if people feel they are missing out on the benefits of our petroleum wealth. This is why the Petroleum Fund is used in such a transparent manner in the budget, on infrastructure spending, and on the delivery of education and health services. Mr. President, Timor-Leste is now at a stage where we can give back to the international community, in particular by sharing our experiences and lessons learned. Timor-Leste is the current chair of the G7 Plus group of fragile post-conflict and conflict-affected nations. The aim of this group is to provide a united voice for the G7 Plus countries and to advocate for a different approach to peace building and state building, anchored in national priorities and ownership of the peace building and development agenda. The G7 Plus know from bitter experience that without peace and stability, there can be no development, and that conflict is development in reverse. As such, a comprehensive approach is needed that addresses the specific challenges and root causes in each particular conflict setting. I take this opportunity to highlight that no fragile or conflict-affected country has achieved a single MDG and that according to the World Development Report of 2011, conflict can set a country back 30 years in lost domestic product growth. Insecurity and violence, weak institutions and poverty are interlinked factors that create serious obstacles to peace, development and the attainment of the MDGs. Progress requires an approach that links security, political and development actors. That is why the G7 Plus nations have been promoting the New Deal and its peace-building, state-building goals, which address economic foundations along with revenues and services as well as security, to ensure that development is country-owned and country-led. Underpinning all this is the need for strong institutions, governance and capacity to ensure accountable and fair social service delivery. As my Prime Minister stated in the General Assembly last September, we are not fragile because we are poor. We are fragile because we have weak institutions. A critical aspect in moving beyond conflict and in building strong, resilient, effective and efficient institutions is the need for strong partnerships. Specifically, partnerships built on mutual trust with respect for national ownership. That is why Timor-Leste is pleased to co-chair with Denmark the International Dialogue on Peace Building and State Building. The dialogue brings together fragile and conflict-affected countries and international partners and exemplifies the importance of sharing knowledge and experience. National ownership and the building of resilience required concerted efforts, and effective and transparent resource management can contribute greatly to both. The G7 Plus advocates efforts to manage risks, increase the use of country systems, and support for the building of national capacities. These can all add to the long-term process of peace building and state building and assist in breaking the cycles of conflict and build resilience. I thank you.
I thank the representative of... And before I give the floor to the representative of Gabon, could I again remind all speakers to limit their statements to no more than 4 minutes in order to enable the Council to carry out its work expeditiously. Delegations with lengthy statements are kindly requested to circulate the text in writing and to deliver a condensed version while speaking in the chamber. I now give the floor to the representative of Gabon.
Je remercie Monsieur le Président. Je tiens tout d'abord à joindre ma voix à celle des délégations qui m'ont précédé pour condamner fermement la lâche attaque terroriste dont a souffert le bureau des Nations Unies à Mogadiscio et exprimer la sympathie du Gabon aux parents des victimes. Je tiens également à remercier le vice-secrétaire général, M. Kofi Annan. Le vice-secrétaire général, M. Kofi Annan, Mme Caroline Asté et Rebecca Grispan pour leurs exposés instructifs. Je salue aussi l'organisation du président de Ba et le travail que vous effectuez à la tête du Conseil de sécurité, de même que la prestation de l'ambassadeur Kodjo Menan et toute la délégation togolaise durant le mois de mai. Monsieur le Président, depuis plusieurs années, les ressources naturelles jouent un rôle de premier plan et sont au cœur de toutes les évolutions en Afrique, principalement, alors qu'elles devaient contribuer au développement des pays qui en possèdent et au bien-être de leur population. Les ressources naturelles, y compris les espèces animales et végétales, sont devenues source de conflits et de calamités au point qu'on en parle de malédiction des ressources naturelles. Lorsque les ressources naturelles ne sont pas à l'origine directe des conflits, elles en constituent le facteur aggravant et, par voie de conséquence, prolongent les conflits et rendent les efforts de paix difficiles. Il va sans dire qu'hormis l'insécurité et les violations des droits de l'homme qu'engendrent les conflits liés aux ressources naturelles, le manque à gagner économique pour les États qui sont victimes de l'exploitation anarchique des dites ressources est énorme, engendrant ainsi une pauvreté accrue et contribuant au chômage. Les drames en Angola, en Sierra Leone, au Libéria et en République démocratique du Congo sont de parfaites illustrations. Les initiatives, tant au plan international qu'au niveau des régions directement touchées par l'exploitation illégale des ressources naturelles, n'ont pas fait défaut. En effet, prenant la mesure de la corrélation étroite existant entre le commerce illicite des diamants bruts et le financement des conflits armés, la communauté internationale a, à l'initiative du Canada et sous l'égide des Nations Unies, mis en place un système de certification des diamants pour empêcher le trafic international de ces ressources au profit de la guerre. Lancé en 2000, le processus de Kimberley présente l'avantage d'être pratique et vise en même temps à protéger les économies de nombreux pays dont le revenu national dépend essentiellement de l'extraction du diamant. Une plus forte adhésion à cette initiative est nécessaire en vue d'en assurer l'universalité et un meilleur contrôle du commerce du diamant. Le Gabon appuie également la vision africaine stratégique du traitement de la question des mines. Les 6 outils mis en place par les pays des Grands Lacs, dont l'initiative pour la transparence des industries extractives, ITIE, bénéficient aussi de notre soutien. Monsieur le Président, une meilleure surveillance, l'application des sanctions ciblées décrétées par le Conseil de sécurité touchant les responsables des guerres ou ceux qui en tirent profit devait aller de pair avec celle relative aux embargos sur les armes frappant les zones affectées par l'exploitation illicite de ressources naturelles. Ces sanctions ont prouvé leur efficacité en Angola, en Sierra Leone et au Libéria et sur la réalisation des enquêtes en République démocratique du Congo. Les pays, les entreprises et les secteurs industriels qui profitent du commerce illicite de ressources naturelles doivent respecter pour leur part des normes et standards de responsabilité plus élevés. La communauté internationale se doit par ailleurs d'aider les pays qui en ont grand besoin à renforcer l'autorité de l'État sur l'ensemble de leur territoire national, à réformer le secteur de la sécurité et l'arsenal juridique, notamment le code minier. Au plan intérieur, les États devraient promouvoir la bonne gouvernance, notamment en garantissant une gestion transparente, équitable et durable des ressources naturelles et le renforcement des capacités institutionnelles pour appliquer ce cadre de manière efficace. le Conseil de sécurité devrait aussi inclure et renforcer un soutien technique dans la gestion des ressources naturelles au sein des mandats des missions de maintien de la paix et de la conciliation de la paix. L'on pourrait ainsi empêcher que les ressources naturelles contribuent à alimenter l'instabilité et les conflits et capitaliser le rôle de ces ressources comme outil de consolidation de la paix. Le Gabon souscrit à la réflexion sur une nouvelle force de maintien de la paix visant à prendre en compte les défis sécuritaires liés au changement climatique et à la raréfaction des ressources naturelles. Ma délégation souhaite que le présent débat apporte une valeur ajoutée aux initiatives déjà existantes visant à réduire les risques d'émergence de conflits, d'insécurité, de déstabilisation liés aux ressources naturelles. Le Gabon continuera d'appuyer de telles ressources. C'est dans ce sens que mon pays va présenter, en coordination avec la Belgique, un projet de résolution dans le cadre du groupe informel dit des Amis des ressources naturelles. Ce texte vise, entre autres, à assurer aux États une plus grande souveraineté sur leurs ressources naturelles afin qu'elles participent pleinement à leur croissance, à leur développement. Nous espérons que ce texte bénéficiera d'un très grand soutien. Monsieur le Président, je vous remercie.
On for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of India.
Mr. President, thank you for giving me the floor. And let me at the outset thank you for convening today's open debate. My thanks also to your delegation for preparing a concept paper on the topic under discussion. I would also like to take this opportunity to thank the Deputy Secretary General for his statement earlier in the day. Mr. President, the intrinsic link between effective management of natural resources and development is a time-tested reality. Conflict, indeed, holds back development. It is a fact that in several countries on the agenda of the Security Council, including those in Africa, control over natural resources and their exploitation are serious exacerbating factors fanning conflict and also remain major impediment to post-conflict nation-building. If one peeps into the history of these conflicts, both control and exploitation of natural resources have been driven largely by factors outside the control of the affected countries. Outside interference for control and exploitation of natural resources, when combined with political objectives and ethnic rivalries, has been a particularly combustive mix for conflicts. This has caused several countries in Africa to remain mired in conflicts for decades. It is therefore necessary to tackle the issue holistically. Mr. President, it is imperative that we fully respect the sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity of all UN member states, including when this Council considers situations on its agenda. The international community, including this Council, must respect the states' right to control and manage their affairs, including natural resources. There must be no attempt to be prescriptive about control, management, and use of natural resources by the states concerned. Even while some countries in Africa are in conflict related to natural resources, we must note that the continent has been the second fastest growing region of the world in the past decade. During the first decade of the current millennium, 6 of the 10 fastest growing economies were from Africa. The collective African GDP is expected to grow to US$2.6 trillion by 2025. Clearly, with the increased assistance of the international community, conflict-affected countries in Africa can achieve faster progress. In this regard, it is important for the international community, particularly the United Nations, to play a seminal role in capacity building of the concerned member states. Conflict-affected countries do not need assistance to fulfill their international commitments. Conflict-affected countries do need assistance to fulfill their international commitments and strengthen their internal institutions, including those dealing with security and border control. The role of the international community, including the relevant UN agencies, should be to enhance development partnership with the countries in conflict situations. This should include higher allocation of financial, technical, and human resources by donors and UN agencies and must be aligned with the national priorities of the countries concerned. Mr. President, we commend the efforts and the commitment of the relevant United Nations agencies in developing capacities of countries in conflict and post-conflict situations. We hope that their commitment to capacity building of states, including in control and management of natural resources, will be matched by adequate resources and support will be provided based on request of national governments and on mutual agreement. Mr. President, before I conclude, let me state that there has been a concerted push to bring several normative issues into the Council's agenda under the pretext of their affecting international peace and security. This needs to be avoided for the effective functioning of the UN system. The Charter provides clear division of responsibilities between the Assembly, the General Assembly, the Security Council, ECOSOC, and other specialized bodies created by the member states. All UN bodies, including this Council, must respect this division of roles and responsibilities. I thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of India for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Sudan.
شكراً جزيلاً سيد الرئيس. في المستهل نتقدم بالتعازي لأسرة بعثة حفظ السلام في مقديشو ولأسرة الضحايا على الهجوم الذي راح ضحيته عدداً منهم. أرجو أن نتقدم لكم سيد الرئيس بالتهنئة على رئاستكم لمجلس الأمن لهذا الشهر وعلى الورقة المفاهيمية حول موضوع نشوب منع النزاعات وكيفية الإدارة الفعالة والشفافة للموارد الطبيعية. وغني عن القول أن الموارد الطبيعية الغير متجددة مثل المياه والنفط والغاز والمعادن يمكن أن تكون سببا في إطالة أمد النزاع إذا لم تتوفر الإرادة الحكيمة والشفافة لتلك الموارد. لا شك سيد الرئيس أننا جميعا نتذكر مضامين البيان الرئاسي الأول الذي أصدره مجلس الأمن في يونيو عام 2007 حول العلاقة بين الموارد الطبيعية والنزاعات، ونشير بوجه خاص إلى أن المساعدات التي يمكن أن تقدمها الأمم المتحدة عبر بعثاتها لحفظ السلام أو عبر مكاتبها القطرية يجب أن تتم بناء على طلب من الدولة المعنية وفي إطار الاحترام الكامل للسيادة والشرعية والتأكيد على الملكية الوطنية الكاملة فيما يتعلق بالسياسات الاستراتيجية لإدارة الموارد الطبيعية في الدول. سيد الرئيس، إن التنافس بين المجموعات السكانية حول الماء والكلأ يعد من الأسباب الجذرية لنشوب النزاعات، وفي هذا السياق لا بد من الإشارة إلى أن النزاع في دارفور خير مثال لذلك، إذ أن موجات الجفاف والتصحر التي ضربت دولا عديدة من أفريقيا خلال ثمانينيات القرن الماضي من بينها السودان أدت إلى شح في الموارد الطبيعية، مما أدى بدوره إلى احتدام التنافس والمصادمات بين القبائل الرعوية والزراعية تماما كالذي حدث في دارفور. تلك الصدامات سيد الرئيس تطورت لاحقا بعد أن اختلطت بعوامل أخرى إلى نزاع وأخذت أبعادها السياسية. السيد الرئيس، كما تابعتم فقد حدثت مواجهات في بعض المناطق في دارفور حول مناجم التعدين الأهلي لاستخراج الذهب، تلك النعمة التي أنعم الله بها على ذلك الإقليم والتي لا نريد لها أن تكون نغمة. ولذلك نشير في هذا السياق إلى أن حكومة السودان قد وضعت استراتيجيات وقوانين من أجل تنظيم عمليات التعدين الأهلي بطريقة تمنع حدوث مصادمات قبلية في مناجم التعدين الأهلي مستقبلا. سيد الرئيس، ختاما، إننا نؤمن على ما جاء في الورقة المفاهيمية بشأن أهمية الإدارة السليمة والشفافة للموارد الطبيعية، ونشير إلى أهمية الدور الذي يمكن أن تطلع به الأمم المتحدة أيضا في هذا السياق، وهو ينحصر في إزداء المشورة المحايدة والنزيهة للحكومات الوطنية بناء على طلبها كما أسلفنا. كما نؤكد على أهمية دعم ومساعدة الحكومات الوطنية لتحقيق السلام والاستقرار باعتباره الركيزة الأساسية التي تبنى عليها المؤسسات الوطنية القوية الراشدة لإدارة الموارد الطبيعية في البلدان. كما نهيب مجلسكم الموقر أن يدعم جهود تحقيق السلام والاستقرار في السودان بإرسال رسالة قوية للمجموعات المتمردة المنضوية تحت تحالف ما يسمى بالجبهة الثورية السودانية، التي أعلنت أن هدفها هو الإطاحة بحكومة السودان عن طريق العمل العسكري، وأردفت ذلك الإعلام بتنفيذ هجمات عسكرية على العديد من المدن والقرى في شمال وجنوب كردفان، ولم تسلم منها حتى مكاتب بعثة الأمم المتحدة المؤقتة في كادوغلي، الأمر الذي أسفر عن سقوط ضحايا من حفظة السلام في تلك المنطقة. السيد الرئيس، إن هذه المجموعات المتمردة ما كانت لتتجرأ أبدا على القيام بارتكاب هذه الجرائم الصارخة لو أن مجلس الأمن تعامل معها بحسم، ولم تكن لتجرأ على الاستمرار في تلك الاعتداءات. ولذلك فقد آن الأوان أن يتخذ مجلسكم الموقر إجراءات عقابية رادعة ضد هذه الحركات المتمردة التي تستهدف ضرب البنيات التحتية والموارد والمقار التنموية في البلاد. وشكرا سيد الرئيس.
I thank the representative of Sudan for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Eritrea.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to thank the delegation of the United Kingdom for organizing this open thematic debate on prevention and conflicts and natural resources. I would also like to commend today's speakers for their informative introductory remarks. Mr. President, today's attack of the UN compound in Mogadishu is appalling. My delegation wishes to extend its deep condolences to the families of the victims and expresses its solidarity with the people and government of Somalia. Mr. President, my delegation views that endowments in natural resources as an asset to lift millions of people out of poverty. However, fierce and aggressive competition over access, illegal exploitation, and mismanagement of natural resources are among the most important factors that are linked to several civil strifes in African states, both causing and perpetuating conflicts. Employing a good governance in control, management, and trade of natural resources and equitable access to natural resources, therefore, become imperative in ensuring an inclusive economic and social well-being of all the people in a given country. This in itself would be critical to maintaining and creating a cohesive and harmonious society. It is equally important to underscore the negative impact of exploitative interferences by external powers and transnational companies that undermine sovereign rights of many member states over the use and management of their natural resources. More often than not, this has become a recipe for international conflicts with grave consequences for international peace and security. While concurring with some of the elements mentioned by delegates regarding intrastate conflicts, including measures to prevent illicit exploitation of natural resources by non-state actors, I would like to stress the following. First, states have the prime responsibility of developing and exploiting their natural resources for the benefit of their respective societies. This is an inalienable right, which is also unambiguously reflected in a landmark General Assembly Resolution 1803 of 1962. Second, in recent years, the Security Council has acted on several occasions to curb the negative consequences of illicit trade in natural resources targeting non-state actors. It must, however, be stressed when such actions are taken, it is important that there is a full consent of the state concerned. More importantly, any resolution by the Council should not undermine states' right to exploit its natural resources, nor be used as a tool for political pressure. In this connection, it is important to underscore that UN organs dealing with social and economic development are best suited to discuss the issue of international cooperation and natural resources. Mr. President, as a country that has come out from the ashes of war and endowed with natural resources, Eritrea has recently reached to a stage of developing and exploiting its mineral resources in close cooperation with its international partners. In Eritrea, all mineral resources are designated as public property, and that the conservation and development of these resources must be ensured for Eritrea's present and future generations. Let me conclude by stressing that Eritrea views that natural resources should promote cooperation, not conflicts. It is firmly convinced that pursuing policies with the aim of creating a win-win solution is critical within and between countries and corporations on the sustainable utilization of resources. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of Eritrea for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Ecuador.
Gracias, señor presidente. Y como casi todas las delegaciones ya lo han hecho, empiezo expresando nuestra condena al ataque perpetrado en Mogadiscio contra las instalaciones de las Naciones Unidas. Nuestra solidaridad con los familiares de los fallecidos como consecuencia de este ataque y nuestra certeza de que este acto no perjudicará los esfuerzos de la ONU y de la Unión Africana de apoyar a Somalia en su camino a la estabilidad y el desarrollo. Señor presidente, mi delegación agradece la oportunidad de poder presentar sus criterios respecto de este tema, pues para el Ecuador es importante discutir diferentes enfoques y visiones sobre prevención de conflictos y recursos naturales. Debo reiterar, sin embargo, la posición permanente de mi país de rechazo a los continuos intentos de llevar al campo de la seguridad y por lo tanto a la jurisdicción de este Consejo, asuntos vinculados con el desarrollo y las dimensiones que éste engloba, incluyendo la utilización responsable y sostenible de los recursos naturales, pues creemos que los espacios idóneos para tratar este asunto de interés universal son la Asamblea General y el ECOSOC. La Constitución Política del Ecuador establece el derecho a una vida digna, hacia lo cual se orienta el uso y manejo responsable de los recursos naturales, respetando sus límites y ciclos vitales, mandato que se traduce en el Plan Nacional para el Buen Vivir, que apunta a un desarrollo sostenible e integral del ser humano. En esa línea, Ecuador enfatiza los siguientes elementos, los que deberían, desde nuestro punto, guiar este debate. Primero, respeto a los principios consagrados en la Carta de la ONU, en especial la soberanía de los Estados, su integridad y la no intervención. Segundo, objetivos centrados en el ser humano para promover sus derechos humanos, económicos y sociales y favorecer el desarrollo sostenible. Tercero, estos objetivos no restringen ni limitan el papel rector del Estado en su territorio nacional, por el contrario, lo fortalece. En base a estos principios, mi delegación considera importante, en lo que respecta a la prevención de conflictos que podrían ser causados por recursos naturales, tener presente que se deben diferenciar dos aspectos trascendentales. Responsabilidad global, compartida pero diferenciada, considerando que los países ricos son los que más contaminan, mientras que los países del sur son los que tienen el mayor patrimonio natural y proveen los bienes públicos ambientales, es decir, bienes que favorecen a toda la humanidad. Redistribución del ingreso global con la búsqueda de una equidad en la repartición de la riqueza mundial, lo que ayudaría a prevenir conflictos por recursos naturales, como los que se han suscitado o ya se han suscitado en el pasado en varias regiones en el mundo. En esa línea que debemos considerar que el crecimiento económico ilimitado es imposible, por lo que esa tendencia desmesurada debe limitarse por auténticas formas de sostenibilidad. Señor presidente, la injusticia grosera del actual sistema económico internacional, que no garantiza el acceso equitativo a los recursos naturales, generando con ello, en muchas regiones, altos niveles de subdesarrollo y exclusión social, es, sin duda, una de las raíces de la violencia que aún agobia a tantas sociedades. Finalmente, señor presidente, mi delegación no puede dejar de recordar a las tantas víctimas de conflictos armados provocados por la ambición desmesurada de algunos países de tener acceso a los recursos naturales de otros estados soberanos. Estos conflictos son aún más dolorosos cuando suceden bajo la cobertura de intervenciones humanitarias. Nuestros esfuerzos deberían orientarse a garantizar, más bien, la capacidad de toda la humanidad de acceder a aquellos recursos necesarios para la vida y su desarrollo en el marco del respeto a los derechos de la naturaleza. Gracias, señor presidente.
I thank the representative of Ecuador for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Egypt.
شكرا سيدي الرئيس. أود في البداية أن أعبر عن الألم والإدانة للهجوم الذي حدث على مكتب الأمم المتحدة في الصومال، وأعبر عن خالص تعازي شعب وحكومة جمهورية مصر العربية للأمم المتحدة ولشعب وحكومة الصومال الشقيق. Mr. President, I would like to express our appreciation to the UK Presidency of the Security Council for organizing today's debate on conflict prevention and natural resources. A subject of great interest to all members of the United Nations, in particular countries in conflict and post-conflict situations, including in Africa. I would like also to thank through you the Deputy Secretary General, Mr. Jan Eliasson, the representative of the World Bank, Mr. Kofi Annan, and Mrs. Greenspan, for their valuable participation and introductory statements. Our debate today poses a very serious question on how to ensure that non-renewable natural resources are a means for growth and development and not a source of instability and conflict. Conflicts are the product of multiple and complex factors. However, many conflict situations are linked to competition over natural resources. Countries in post-conflict situations are doing their best to develop efficient and accountable national structures and build national capacity in the management of natural resources. These efforts should be fully supported by the international community, including through technical and financial assistance when needed. The international community's response to the question of cutting the link between natural resources and armed conflicts, particularly through initiatives such as the Kimberley Process and the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, reflects the importance of curbing the illegal exploitation of natural resources in order to support efforts to achieve peace, stability, and sustainable development. As a member of the Group of Friends of Natural Resources, Egypt lends its unequivocal support to these initiatives and their goals. The United Nations is contributing to these efforts through its conflict prevention, peacekeeping, and peacebuilding efforts. Supporting national capacity building in the area of management of natural resources is becoming an integral part of the mandate of peacekeeping operations. The efforts of the Peacebuilding Commission to ensure that extractive industries in countries in post-conflict situations contribute to stability and socio-economic development, and they cannot be overemphasized. Mr. President, our efforts to ensure that extractive industries in countries in post-conflict situations contribute to stability and socio-economic development cannot meet full success without the collaboration of all stakeholders, including the international financial institutions and the private sector. The World Development Report of 2011, prepared by the World Bank Group on Conflict, Security and Development, emphasized that building capable and legitimate institutions is the key for breaking the cycle of violence and avoid a relapse into conflict in fragile and conflict-affected countries. Egypt commends as well in this regard the African mining vision adopted by the African Union in 2008, as well as the Great Lakes Region Protocol against the illegal exploitation of natural resources. Finally, Egypt underlined the importance of regional approaches to address the exploitation of shared natural resources in order to make these resources a force for regional peace and mutual cooperation. I thank you for your attention.
I thank the representative of Egypt for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Papua New Guinea.
Thank you, Mr. President. This Council in July 2005 wound up the successful mandate oversighting the resolution of the bloody civil conflict on the island of Bougainville in Papua New Guinea. Initiated by the good offices of then UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, one of today's distinguished speakers, the decade-long mandate was able to assist in the resolution of the conflict, a conflict which in its essence resulted from the disagreements relating to the massive Bougainville copper mine, which at the time was the largest open-cut mine in the world before the Escondida copper mine in Chile. At its operational peak and prior to the start of the conflict in 1989, the Bougainville mine contributed to about 20% of Papua New Guinea's national budget. Mr. President, since the end of the UN Security Council mandate in 2005, the autonomous region of Bougainville has been created under the Bougainville Peace Agreement, along with several elections for the autonomous government led by a president. In real terms, the post-conflict building in Bougainville continues as work in progress with numerous milestones and institutional strengthening still to be achieved. The Papua New Guinea government continues to be involved at the highest levels throughout this critical phase as we jointly continue with the peace-building process. And I emphasize the word joint here because it is the operative word. Mr. President, as a nation on the cusp of enormous economic growth underpinned by the past decade of positive sustained economic growth of over 5% per annum, the Papua New Guinea government continues to plan and engage in many different ways to ensure that the wealth which will flow from the massive multi-billion dollar LNG project funded by Exxon, along with other mining and multinational corporations, and including other natural resource ventures, must benefit all of the people of Papua New Guinea. From infrastructure to attempting to deal with the social imbalances in our society, our government is determined to ensure that the distribution of wealth through the country, throughout the country, is balanced and effective. As noted in our country statement at the opening of the UNGA in September 2012, the government proposes to share the wealth with other Pacific countries, and this is already happening in a very small way. The Papua New Guinea government is aware of the huge responsibility emanating from the great opportunity which presents itself from the exploitation of our vast natural resources, which include copper, gold, and other base metals, along with gas and petroleum. Mr. President, our unique land tenure system lends itself to creating a picture that anywhere else would be tantamount to distraught confusion. With a population of just over 7 million people, our diversity through our more than 800 languages and tribes provides an elaborate mosaic from which to address our massive natural resources, which also include our marine resources, of which many we jointly share with our Pacific Island neighbours. The question of whether we have learnt any lessons from the Bougainville conflict, along with the reasons as to why that conflict arose, remains seared in our collective minds and provides an important yardstick upon which we need as a nation to properly address the exploitation of our natural resources. The bedrock of all natural resource exploitation in Papua New Guinea is underpinned by the prerequisite under the legally sanctioned and compulsory natural resource development forums, where the Papua New Guinea government must consult all the landowners and groups within the resource areas, including oftentimes those on the periphery, to obtain the approvals to develop the resource. What seems a very cumbersome process, and it is, works because our constitution guarantees traditional ownership of land by our peoples, wherever they come from in Papua New Guinea. It is a sacrosanct part of the ethos of our nationhood and continues to serve us well, notwithstanding the conflict on Bougainville. Mr. President, finally, working with developing partners, along with development partners, along with the recent participation in the EITI conference in Sydney, and also recently with the initiative for the South-South Energy Initiative, this allows Papua New Guinea, in our view, to participate meaningfully in many of the processes which were described by many other delegations in this debate today. And I thank you, Mr. President, for actually hosting this meeting. Thank you.
I thank the representative of Papua New Guinea for his statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Japan.
Thank you, Mr. President. At outset, Japan also strongly condemns the violent attack on the UN compound in Mogadishu today and expresses its heartfelt condolences to the family of the victims. Mr. President, I would like to thank the UK for its timely initiative. If managed correctly, natural resources can serve as a growth engine by increasing investment, state revenue, and employment opportunities. However, weak management of these resources, in particular illegal exploitation and trading of extractive resources, may trigger and perpetuate conflicts. The international community, therefore, must engage with this issue in a coherent and coordinated manner to build the management capacity of resource-rich yet conflict-affected countries. Mr. President, Japan, in its capacity as a chair of the Working Group on Lessons Learned of the Peacebuilding Commission, has addressed this topic. The meeting in July 2011, devoted to economic revitalization and youth employment for peacebuilding, generated some useful lessons on natural resource management that I wish to share with the Council today. First, resource management is dealt with by multiple actors and is composed of multiple dimensions, including sanctions, peace negotiations, law enforcement, regulatory and transparency regime, human rights, and environmental concerns. The international community must do more to take coordinated actions. In this regard, the PBC can take the initiative in the area of peace building and coalesce all stakeholders to develop a coherent approach. For example, the PBC should facilitate the integration of natural resources issues into peace building strategies, as well as in the context of security and justice sector reforms. Second, post-conflict populations should be able to benefit from peace dividend derived from resources extracted from their own soil. The efforts for conflict prevention and effective resource management should always include this perspective. Assisting diversification of industries also serves this purpose. We intend to further explore this theme in the upcoming meeting of the working group scheduled for 10th of July. As part of our discussion on domestic resource mobilization, we intend to shed light on the important linkage between the revenue raised and the actual service delivery on the ground to avoid recurrence of conflicts. Third, voluntary initiatives such as the EITI and the Kimberley process are vital. Compliance with these initiatives will enhance the governance of resource-rich countries and corporate values. In addition, the working group meeting highlighted the role of civil society and the internet in improving transparency. Mr. President, Japan, in its national capacity, has also contributed to assisting better management of natural resources. First, improving the effectiveness of the sanctions regime is of critical importance in restricting the flow of illicit resources. The permanent mission of Japan has been co-hosting a series of roundtables in order to enhance the understanding of these regimes and strengthen non-proliferation efforts. Second, Japan has been supporting the improvement of livelihood of population in the conflict-affected mining areas, including through a project for peace consolidation in North Kivu based on the concept of human security. A fair and balanced distribution of peace dividend in conflict-torn areas will enhance national reconciliation efforts. Third, Japan has supported the expansion of various international initiatives such as the OECD Due Diligence Guidance and the EITI through contribution to its multi-donor trust fund in the case of the latter. In order for these initiatives to genuinely take effect, there need to be a wider acceptance of such initiatives. Lastly, the outcome document of the 5th Tokyo International Conference on Africa Development, namely TICAD 5, stipulated to promote sustainable management of all Africa's natural resources and conservation of biodiversity. Japan is committed to promoting sustainable and resilient growth in Africa while supporting maintenance of peace and stability. Mr. President, in closing, allow me to reiterate Japan's strong interest in this topic. We will continue to remain engaged, both bilaterally as well as through different multilateral forums. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of Japan for her statement. There are no more names inscribed on the list of speakers. The Security Council has thus concluded the present stage of its consideration of the item on its agenda. The meeting is adjourned.